The law number two that you need to know is the IMEX program, which is part of NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement. And what that enables an organization to do is import a product into Mexico and export a product back into America without having to pay any duties or tariffs between America and Mexico.
Hi, folks. It's the Quiet Light Podcast with Joe Valley and Mark Doust. Quiet Light Brokerage is the leader in helping entrepreneurs build, buy, and sell their online businesses. Since 2007, we have helped thousands buy and sell online businesses. And now, we're putting our extensive knowledge in your earbuds with our trademark relentless honesty and a few laughs along the way.
Okay, here's the deal. I'm not here to waste your time, okay? And I certainly hope you're not here to waste mine. So I'm gonna keep this short.
And now, here's Joe and Mark.
Mark, one of the biggest challenges for startup entrepreneurs, you know, much like Amanda talked about on the podcast, is sourcing great products. Now, there's lots of experts out there with podcasts that help, and they're very, very good information. But sometimes people need a little bit of a boost, a little hand-holding. And I understand you had Nathan Resnick from Sourceify on the podcast to talk about just that.
Yeah, absolutely. So he founded Sourceify.com, which is a SaaS product. They have thousands of pre-vetted factories, hundreds of product categories. And what they do is they help you source that product and also improve that entire sourcing process, right? Because there's a lot of complex factors when it comes to A, finding the right products, and then B, making sure that you're getting the right margins out of those products and getting your timing right. I mean, Joe, how many Amazon businesses have you looked at where the owner says, well, if you could just figure out the inventory ordering system, you know, because I missed out and ran out of inventory, business could have done so much more. It's like every single business, right?
Every single one. I ask the question, have you ever run out of inventory? The answer is always yes. The follow-up question is, how much revenue did you lose during that time period? And then how do you overcome that? And you know, it's often working capital, better planning, software, things of that nature. It's always a challenge though.
Well, and so this software does this, right? It takes a look at it, and he explained this. He says, you know, imagine that you're selling watches, right? You're not just working with one factory, because that factory might be ordering the wristbands from a completely different part of the world. And so you need to factor all of this in when you are building out your lead times and also understanding your margins as well. And so we talk a lot about how do you negotiate better rates? When should you negotiate better rates? How do you establish good relationships with your manufacturers? And other ways that you can really optimize logistics behind your ordering process. This guy, I'll just be blunt, he's way smarter than I am.
that's not very hard though, Mark. Come on.
Well, no, that's not. That's like 95% of the people on the podcast.
I understand he had one really, really cool tip in terms of importing.
And I'm not going to try and explain what it is here on the intro. You're going to have to wait and listen for it. But he talks about using Mexico as a place to import products to be able to save a substantial amount of money on that importing process. So I'm going to let you guys listen to that and tell me, send me an email if you found that tip to be absolutely killer, because it literally, like, you'll probably hear me in the interview. He threw me off my normal pacing that I would have, because I didn't know where to go. I was like, wow, that was really an incredible tip. So listen for that. And yeah, really interesting guy who's done a lot in just a couple of years.
Well, I think any tips and tricks that people can learn to decrease their costs, increase their discretionary earnings, increases the value of their business if and when they ever decide to sell it. So I'm looking forward to listening to this one myself. Just a quick reminder, everyone, movie quote. If you heard it, you want to rewind. If you know what it is, drop it in the notes below, and we'll give you a shout out on the next episode.
Nathan, thanks so much for joining me.
Mark, it's my pleasure. Really excited to be here.
You and I just met. We met at Prosper Show. We talked for, I think, like 2 minutes before I was like, you got to be on my podcast. I want you to come on board. And you were very gracious to agree. Would you mind giving everybody just a quick background on who you are, the company you're with, and why I asked you to come on the podcast?
Totally. Yeah. I mean, so I run a company called Sourceify. We are the fastest growing B2B manufacturing order management system. What we do is enable companies to source out the best factories in the world, as well as bring their supply chain online so they can be data driven and understand how their unit costs, lead times, and quality defect rates have been fluctuating per product and per factory. People always ask, okay, Nathan, you know, how'd you get into all this? And really, it actually stems 10 years ago. I was living in China as a foreign exchange student with a host family that didn't speak English, attending a local Chinese high school, and started importing products from different markets in Beijing where I was living. So we'd import all sorts of products, sell them on eBay and Amazon. You know, in high school, I think senior year, we were just making a few $1,000s a month. And then by the time I turned 19, I had my first, you know, low six-figure year through my own Shopify stores, and really just became so fascinated by e-commerce as well as the power of these factories to produce all sorts of products. So about 2 years ago, started Sourceify, and we've been on an awesome journey so far and really excited to, you know, continue to help organizations streamline and optimize their production overseas.
Yeah, I just was doing a little bit of show prep here, and people that listen to the show are probably going to laugh at that because we don't do a ton of show prep. That's why I had you do the intro. But you've gotten some really impressive press with what you're doing. I saw Forbes publish a piece on you and the growth of Shopify. Share where your offices are right now. You have multiple offices all across the world.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, kind of crazy story with us and press was last year, especially with these China trade tariffs. Everyone was talking about how these tariffs are affecting companies that are, you know, importing products from China. And for us, we have offices in China, Vietnam, and India, and run production everywhere from the Philippines to Pakistan, basically every country in Asia. And so we became a hot topic. You know, we were on CNN, CNBC, I mean, really all over the news. And it was an exciting time and still is. I mean, I think really if you look at China as a whole, it's gotten more expensive. And so for us, you know, we've got three offices overseas. And then in America, we're headquartered in San Diego and have a, you know, small offices in Las Vegas as well as Lehi, Utah, right outside Salt Lake City.
Yeah, the Las Vegas area, that's got to be just for all the conferences that are held there, right? I mean, yeah. We're always out there.
Yeah, not for all the partying.
Right. I wish I had known this a year ago when, well, not even a year ago, but when all the tariff stuff was hitting, I had James Thompson, who's co-founder of Prosper Show. I had him come on the podcast, and we were joking that we had to have a Canadian come on the show to explain U.S. Policy as it relates to China. But cool. How old is Sourceify?
So we started in March of 2017, so just about 2 years old. And, you know, it's been a pretty amazing journey. We produce in over 300 product categories, everything from hair extensions to bags to bunk beds. I mean, you name it, our abilities are widespread. And really that stems from having a strong sourcing team as well as, you know, strong factory relationships. So a lot of times organizations, when they work with Sourceify, they're able to increase their margin just by buying in volume through our customers that, you know, might be producing similar products. And so that's one of the, you know, main benefits, I think.
Yeah. I want to get into a lot of the kind of details of these, of sourcing products and also some of the differentiation. And you touched on something that I was going to ask about. So I'm going to jump the gun a bit here with this. Is this an open sort of a book where you can see some of the other products that are being manufactured here? And if so, the question that immediately jumps to mind is protection of IP through your platform. What does that look like? How do you protect people's intellectual property?
It's a great question. So, you know, first and foremost, every customer that uses Sourceify has complete transparency. They can see who the factory is. And our goal as a software-driven sourcing company is to enable these organizations that work with Sourceify, both buyers and factories, to have better workflow management and a production process to actually understand what's going on in the production runs. Right now, like pretty much every company we talk to is using email and Excel spreadsheets to manage production, and that works to an extent, but it gets very complex. And so from a, you know, IP perspective, number one, every customer, you know, keeps their factories in their own database. And number two, you know, basically when we talk about IP, it's protected at the border. So a lot of organizations and a lot of people ask, you know, Nathan, should we go try to file trademarks? Should we go try to file patents in China or through Asia? And, you know, most of the time, it's not going to be worth your money or time to go out and try to file those patents or trademarks in China. But what you should do is file trademarks and patents here in America on your products. So, you know, if a company is importing your products under your brand name or trying to sell on Amazon under your brand name, a lot of times you can, you know, show the Customs and Border Patrol or Amazon themselves and say, hey, you know, I own this brand. This company is clearly knocking me off. I did not authorize them to import or sell these products on my behalf. And the right thing, you know, that these law enforcement agencies or Amazon should do is to give you, you know, full control of your products to sell them yourselves.
Okay, cool. So let's talk about, you already mentioned that some of these guys, they're starting out with using Excel spreadsheets and to control the manufacturing process, and it works to an extent. I would love to know, because in our world, we're helping people prepare their businesses for sale. We run into this all the time, right? We have people who come to us with all the metrics that they think they should be presenting and all the metrics that they think are important when it comes to selling. And then we have to kind of adjust their mindset as to, all right, this is a good start. Here's what you should be doing. So let's start with this. How do you find people mostly attack that product sourcing and product development?
Yeah, I mean, I think first and foremost, it stems from a vendor analysis. You know, are you actually working with the right factory that should be producing your product? Hopefully, you've done enough due diligence with your supply chain to understand if you're working with a factory, a trading company, or a, you know, wholesaler or agent. You know, best bet is you're working with a factory. That's great. That's fantastic. Hopefully, you haven't outgrown them. There's a lot of organizations that we see haven't renegotiated their terms or prices in 2 or 3 years, and you've, you know, 10x the production volume that you're buying at, and you're still paying a higher rate. I mean, the smart thing to do is go renegotiate those existing contracts and prices with that factory. If you do an analysis and you find out you're working with a trading company or agent, number one, you've got to understand, okay, how much margin do I think this trading company or agent is making? We see a lot of organizations that we work with say, oh, you know, we've seen the factory numbers, you know, they're only making 1% or 2% of my production run. I mean, unless they're a really large scale facility that's trying to just take up, you know, but like keep their production line going, there's no business that's going to run off of a 1 or 2% margin. I mean, you can't even put, you know, bread on the table with a 1% margin in most organizations. And so when you come, you know, with that perspective in mind, and you think that you've, you know, out negotiated everyone and really have a strong factory, it's not to say that they aren't a strong factory. It's just to say that, I mean, I don't even think you should, you know, try to get your factory to run on a 1% margin, because it's just not sustainable. They'll probably be making quality cuts or messing up lead times or working with the wrong vendors. Because I think what a lot of people and supply chain, you know, team members don't necessarily understand about manufacturing is that most of these facilities that are exporting products to America or Europe or wherever, you know, your products are going, are dealing with a lot of sub suppliers. So they have suppliers that handle the different components that make up your product. So for example, let's say you're producing watches. Those watch factories are going to have the watch strap, the watch case, the watch movement, the watch hands. All of these little pieces that make up that watch are assembled and put together by the factory that you're working with. And until you get to a scale where you're spending, you know, at least a few $100,000, probably more so a few $1 million on production overseas, you aren't going to dive into those sub suppliers and really understand, okay, how much is each little component costing? And, you know, even then building relationships with those sub suppliers to cut costs, you know, it's not going to be worth your time until you're spending, you know, a significant amount of money on production overseas.
Yeah. So what margin should people be expecting there? You said 1% is probably not realistic. What should they be expecting?
I mean, you know, we've had the opportunity actually to invest and buy factories at Sourcify, and we haven't done that. And I don't think we will in the near future. But I mean, most factories that are attractive to us are running on at least 15 to 30%, you know, gross margins. And I think that's sustainable. You know, I think as a business, like, you want to have some margin to reinvest in new machines. You want to have the margin to invest in your team. You know, you've got to have margin there to grow and create a good environment. And I think that's a key dynamic of any business, you know, let alone factories, and especially even factories when, you know, sometimes, especially as your brand might grow, you try to sell into larger retailers like Walmart or Disney or whatever it may be. You know, those larger retailers have their own requirements of your facilities to be able to sell your products in that retailer. So if your factory can't pass a Walmart cert or a Disney cert, you know, you aren't even going to have the opportunity to sell into those larger retailers.
Yeah, so it makes sense to just be investing, making sure that I think a mindset that I hear sometimes from both buyers and then also some of the owners of these businesses when they're renegotiating these contracts over and over with their suppliers is forgetting that on the other side, there's somebody who's still trying to run a business, and it affects that downstream quality. I'm not even sure it's downstream, probably upstream quality of the product that you're getting in return and trying to sell, which leads to nicely into my next question, which would be, what are some things that people should be looking out for with their current supply chain and maybe trends over time, right? Everything starts out good with the first batch product they receive and everything, you know, they're selling well. What should people be looking for on a regular basis from their suppliers?
Definitely. I mean, I think first and foremost, there's a lot of people that I think try to take shortcuts in their supply chain. I think the biggest shortcut that I see people taking is not booking quality control inspections before shipment and before you pay that production balance. I mean, you can get a quality control inspection done through, our partner for QC is Asia Inspection. They just rebranded to Chima. They charge, under $300 or around $300 to send a person to the factory to inspect those products before shipment and before you pay that deposit. And if you don't have a quality control inspection process or program in place, you're going to be getting container loads that might have defective products or might all be wrong. And there's no reason for you not to put those checks and balances in place on every single production run. I mean, I don't care if you've been working with the factory for 2 or 3 years, there's always going to be some products that might be defective. And I'm not saying these QC teams are going to check every single product. They might check 10, 20, 30% of the products depending on the size of the production run. But at least you have images and an analysis of what's going on with those products. And sometimes these are very simple mistakes or quality defects where, like, for example, one of the production runs that we had going on this week, there was, threads that hadn't been cut on these bags. There was loose threads. And we said, hey, before these are shipped, we'd like all these threads to be cut. We don't want these bags coming into America with these threads hanging out. So sometimes it's very simple quality control metrics. And other times you find out the coating on, certain furniture or certain lamp is wrong, whatever it may be. And so having that in place, I think, is really just a must. I mean, there's no reason not to have quality control in place before shipment because, you don't want your products showing up at an FBA warehouse or your own warehouse and you find out, oh, wow, the 30% of these products are defective. So you've got to have checks and balances in place before shipment. And then also, one of the things that we do at Sourcify that I'd recommend everyone do if they can, depending on their buying power, is say to their factories and put in contracts, say, we aren't going to pay for defective products. If the products don't meet our quality control inspection, we aren't going to pay for them and we're going to discount them from our purchase order. So let's say, 3% of your products have quality control defects. Well, now you're saving 3% of your PO because those products are defective. And so putting that in writing, making sure that's clear with the factory is really, I think, the biggest kind of misstep I see companies doing when they're producing products overseas. And then when we talk about trends, it was really big last year. It still is right now. But transitioning and diversifying supply chains outside of China is huge. I mean, so many companies literally every single day are talking to us about producing products in Vietnam, India, Bangladesh, the Philippines, all across Asia. I was on a flight last quarter, the Philippines back to Guangzhou from Manila. And on my right and on my left were two Chinese factory owners that had just transitioned some of their facility to, the outskirts of Manila to start factories in the Philippines. And the reason being is labor rates are more affordable in the Philippines and other parts of Southeast Asia. The biggest challenge stems from the operations of a factory, which these Chinese factory owners already know how to operate a factory effectively. And, really just the raw material. Where do these raw materials come from to produce these products? These factory owners in China have that figured out. And there are some free economic zones in certain parts of Southeast Asia where you can actually import products from other countries into this free economic zone, manufacture the product in that economic zone, and then export it for free. The benefit of the country is just to really increase labor rates in that area. And so that's, I think, really the biggest trend and kind of what's, most overlooked in current companies that are producing products overseas.
Yeah, you anticipated one of my questions, which was the different markets where you're seeing production increase. I know with the tariffs were being threatened and imposed, there was a lot of question about, well, where can we go if these prices rise up? And dovetail that in with some of the reality of the issues that Amazon sellers are dealing with producing in China, right? These 3-month kind of standard lead times, if you're shipping on ocean, it makes it really difficult for people to manage their inventory. So on this side of the ocean, what countries are you seeing emerge at this point as potential viable players, if any?
Definitely. I mean, I think right off the bat, I want to touch on the inventory side in terms of inventory planning. I think we're both friends with Chad at Skubana. I think they do a great job of inventory management and helping you manage that across different channels. One of the key components that I think a lot of companies fall short on is how do you tie that data into factory lead times? And so when you can take lead time data from Sourcify and tie it into your inventory analytics that you have through a tool like Skubana, that's a lot of powerful insight that you can put together. And when you're starting to diversify your supply chain outside of China, you've got to understand that now the raw materials are potentially coming from a different country than your products are being manufactured. And so, for example, in Vietnam, like we work with a pretty high-end apparel brand, and they get their fabric from Taiwan. It's about a two-week lead time to get the fabric from Taiwan and put it to their facility in Vietnam and handle the cut and sew there. And so that's, you know, an added timeline that they have to put into their analytics and planning. I mean, I think forecasting is a huge challenge with any e-commerce business. And I think in any, I mean, you probably see this all the time, in any Amazon business or any e-commerce business, a lot of times when you're going through a high growth period, there's going to be a time where you're almost running out of inventory, or you did run out of inventory, either because you misplanned or because you didn't have the cash to put into inventory. And so, you know, I think it's a crazy dance that these e-commerce companies play when they're trying to understand, okay, you know, how much money should I put into inventory? How much should I, you know, spend on paid acquisition? It's a balance that's really hard to figure out in the early days. And until you have the data to forecast more effectively, you're going to be playing that dance. And, you know, I don't know if there is like a one size fits all answer. I mean, you might know, have a bit more insight in regards to that than I do, but I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on that.
No, honestly, again, I mean, I know a lot of the people that listen to the podcast here are looking for their own acquisitions, and they're trying, you know, they look to this podcast for some insights. And if you can figure this one part out, this is the number one problem that not the number one problem, but one of the most common problems I see with Amazon businesses is that most have some level of seasonality, typically Q4, unless, but I mean, not always, but some have some sort of seasonality. And so we see one of two things happen. Either they run out of inventory at the most crucial time of year on some of their best sellers, or they overbuy, or their shipment dates miss the seasonal period. And so let's say that you overbuy and you have a seasonal product where you're hitting in December, you know, November and December for that Q4 Christmas rush. Now January hits and you got to sit on a whole bunch of inventory for a year, or even worse. And again, this happens more often than people might want to admit. They get those shipments late and they get them the second week of January. And it can be even more difficult if you have spring seasonality because you have Chinese New Year in there. And if you get caught up in that, well, you can completely miss all of your windows there. So the idea of combining something like Skubana, yes, Chaz, a friend, had him on the podcast, great guy, super smart, combining that with Sourcify, anyone who figures that part out, most of the businesses that we list are undervalued in some way, given that they've missed their hot periods in one way or another.
Yeah, I mean, I think the ship times there is something that, you know, you should be able to control. In terms of planning at an early stage, that could be a bit challenging, I could see. But in terms of your ship times, I mean, that's something that you should really have under control and under wraps with your freight forwarder and with your factory. What's crazy to me, just talking about ship times briefly, is that even a lot of freight forwarders, you know, they're getting looped into factories over email and trying to go back and forth to schedule a freight pickup. I mean, all of that should be able to be effectively synced up. And, you know, email is a fine channel to do that. But I mean, I think there's got to be a better method. I mean, a lot of companies that use Sourcify, they link in their freight forwarders so they communicate directly with their factory online and track what's going on. But otherwise, it's just a bunch of people, you know, CC'd on different emails. And it's actually kind of entertaining sometimes to see the back and forth between a factory rep and a freight forwarding rep to figure out when they can schedule a pickup of products.
That's fascinating. All right. I'm not going to let you escape on the other question, though, about this side of the ocean, countries and emerging markets, if any. And maybe you're going to say
in terms of like North America?
North America or even South America, but a 3-month sort of lead time.
Yeah. So I've actually been doing a lot of research into Mexico. You know, we're headquartered in San Diego. And so there's a huge amount of opportunity in Mexico, just south of the border here. And I think it stems from basically, it's kind of a similar dance that these companies play that are transitioning production outside of China, is where does the raw material come from? You know, there's not a lot of raw material sources in Mexico. And so a lot of those facilities that are, you know, doing injection molds or cut and sew are importing those products from other countries. But there are a lot of companies that are producing products in Mexico. And I think it's a growing opportunity. The other dynamic that I want to touch on that a lot of e-commerce companies are starting to look into, and I think it's a huge trend, is actually handling their warehousing and fulfillment right out of Mexico, just across the border from San Diego. And you can actually, if you're doing pick and pack B2C shipments directly to consumers, you can actually avoid duties and tariffs no matter where the product was produced. And I'll walk you through how this works. So basically, you can avoid duties and tariffs by handling your fulfillment and warehousing in Mexico while having the same experience as if these products were fulfilled from California. And the way that that works is there's two laws you have to know of. Number one is Section 321, which is an American law that says when you're importing a product that's valued under $800, you don't have to pay duties or tariffs on that product. The law number two that you need to know is the IMEX program, which is part of NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement. And what that enables an organization to do is import a product into Mexico and export a product back into America without having to pay any duties or tariffs between America and Mexico. And so the way that this works is that you import your products from China or Vietnam or any country that you're producing these products, can import them in bond into the port of Long Beach, have them trucked down in bond across the border, warehouses directly across the border from San Diego, where you warehouse and pick and pack your products out of there. Every time you have a customer buy a product on your website, it's pre-labeled in Mexico, and there's trucks going across the border every single day. And under Section 321, because those products are pre-labeled and each under $800 in value, you don't have to pay duties and tariffs on those products. And it's basically these trucks go across the border every day, drop these products off at USPS, UPS, FedEx. There's distribution centers literally right across the border from Mexico and San Diego. And it's been incredible, you know, doing research and exploring that dynamic down there. And there's companies, I mean, that are literally wiping off millions of dollars in duties and tariffs from their balance sheets just by handling fulfillment and logistics out of Mexico. And there's a lot of big companies that we all know, like Taylor Guitars, Bombas Socks. These, you know, 100 plus million dollar organizations have been doing fulfillment and warehousing in Mexico for, you know, 3+ years now. I mean, it's really a robust operation. And, you know, there is one provider that I know of called Baja Fulfillment that handles, you know, mid to smaller size e-commerce companies. But for the most part, most of these organizations are focused on, you know, larger enterprises, because that's where you're going to get the volume.
That is phenomenal. It's actually such good information. You knocked me completely off my game as to the other questions I wanted to ask.
Well, we can answer questions in regards to this, because a lot of people don't necessarily understand the dynamics and how it works. It's nothing necessarily new, but here's the key dynamic. So, you know, every dropshipping entrepreneur that's dropshipping products from China into America, they're using Section 321. That's how these e-package shipments work, because you don't pay duties and tariffs on those products because each one is pre-labeled and pre-sold and, you know, shipped over via China Postal Service and then USPS into America. And the reason why those products are so cheap is, number one, you know, those shipments are subsidized by our government. There's a lot in the air in regards if those, you know, if that's going to change. But Section 321 is here to stay. I mean, that's a law that's, you know, been passed through Congress. Even if something were to happen with our, you know, current Trump administration, I mean, he wouldn't be able to change it himself, is basically what I'm saying. And so there's millions of packets that come into America every single quarter that are based on Section 321. The key dynamic here is, instead of having to warehouse your products in China or wherever, you know, you're producing your products, you can actually import the container duty-free, truck it down to Mexico in bond, and then you're basically picking and packing those products out of Mexico with the same fulfillment experience as if it was out of California, because these trucks are going across the border every single day. So it's pretty crazy dynamic. And, you know, there's not many providers or even e-commerce companies that are really doing it right now. But being here in San Diego, it's something that I've been spending a lot of time on and really just become very interested in.
That's fantastic. I'm going to completely shift gears, mainly because I didn't have any questions on that, even though that is phenomenal, a phenomenal bit of advice. I want to talk a little bit about the product manufacturing process and developing new products. Obviously, most e-commerce businesses, you need to be continually releasing new products, at least variations on that. What are some of the mistakes that you see from people creating and retailing some of these proprietary products in that process of looking for the factory, the manufacturer, and maybe shortening up that exchange that happens between manufacturer and eventually getting it out to retail?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's a great question. I would say if it's, you know, a product under IP protection, you know, what a lot of companies do is have one piece made at one facility, another piece made at another facility, and then either have one of the facilities assemble it or, you know, assemble it here in America. I would not suggest really assembling domestically, just the labor cost and headache is going to be too much. But sometimes it does make sense to diversify your supply chain to have more IP protection under place. I think at the end of the day, a lot of this IP protection in China really revolves around your factory relationship and dynamic with them. But then again, if it's a really, really hot selling product like, you know, these fidget spinners or the inflatable, you know, chairs that came out the other year, you know, those things shot up like a rocket ship and literally everyone was claiming to sell them and invent them and all this craziness. So I think really when it comes to IP protection, still stems from having that, you know, dialed in here domestically. But overseas, it's a matter sometimes of, you know, diversifying your supply chain, building a relationship with your factory. And, you know, I would also recommend visiting them face to face. I mean, I'm in China once a month at our office in Guangzhou and, you know, in Vietnam. And it's a lot of travel, but, you know, it really helps us establish a brand and connection overseas.
How important do you think that is? Because I've had clients play on both sides where they are there at least once a year. I've had other people say, well, I visited once like 5 years ago, and I just don't see the need to visit more frequently.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's necessarily a need. I think it depends on your business. You know, for us, we've got a subsidiary in China. We have, you know, a dozen or so full-time employees through China and you know, more in Vietnam and India. And the dynamic there is mostly just our business puts me in a position where it's a lot of management and making sure things are operating smoothly there. But if I was an e-commerce entrepreneur, I mean, as long as I have my checks and balances in place, communication is fluid, and everything is going, you know, smoothly, there's not necessarily a reason to go over there. All you're going to do is, you know, see the facility, probably, you know, have some tea at the facility, grab dinner, you know, maybe drink some baijiu or something, and basically break bread with your factory, which is awesome. It's a great experience and really a cool culture dynamic. But I think, you know, if you're really going over to optimize, you know, costs or really negotiate in person, I mean, that could be beneficial, especially if you're having a challenge with kind of things getting lost in translation between communication with your supplier. So I think it depends on the business. I mean, I know, you know, 8-figure e-commerce companies where the, you know, founders have never met their suppliers before and do exceptionally well. And I know, you know, 8-figure founders that go over once a quarter or, you know, pretty often. So it depends. I mean, I don't think there's a one size fits all answer to that. I just think it depends how your supply chain has been performing. And that, I think, is the key question that you have to ask.
I want to talk real quick about scaling and also scaling up with the factory and their ability to match scale. Have you seen clients run into problems with that where they've scaled so quickly where factories simply can't keep up and finding quality factories to be able to, you know, backfill that demand?
Definitely. I mean, I think there's two key ways for Amazon businesses to scale up. You know, number one is just increasing paid acquisition or ranking higher for keywords. The other is to diversify your product offering. You know, start selling products in product categories that you weren't selling in before. And there's different strategies. I mean, if you're selling products in new product categories, you're going to have to do a lot of sourcing work to make sure you're getting those products made effectively. And that's it takes a lot of work and a lot of time. Whereas if you're scaling up with these same products, you know, every factory that you work with, if you say, hey, I'm going to order 10 times the number of units, they're going to be thrilled. They're going to be very excited. Does that mean that all those products are going to be produced at their own facility? Maybe not. You know, there could be the dynamic where they produce products with subcontracting factories that, you know, might not have the cleanest facilities, might have a higher quality defect rate. And so that's something to be aware of is really understanding, okay, what is my actual true factory capacity? That's hard to understand without actually going to visit the facility. But there's, you know, I think kind of the key way to really understand that is what I call just the kind of white paper trick, where you just basically have the rep that you talk with at the factory write your name and date on a piece of paper and have them go around the facility filming a video with that piece of paper in the video or picture so you can actually see what that facility looks like without going there. And that way, you know, at least this rep that you're talking to has access to that facility. you know, who knows if it's the actual factory that is producing your product or not, or maybe you'll be able to see your products on production line, but at least you know that that rep has access to that facility.
This has been really useful, and we're unfortunately running out of time. So let's end it with this. And you've offered a ton of useful information. So let's talk real quick about Sourcify and the particular benefit that Amazon sellers are going to see from it. You touched it at the beginning, but this is kind of a chance to be maybe a little more direct with that.
Yeah, totally. I mean, our goal is to enable organizations to optimize their supply chain. Typically, when a company works with Sourcify, they save anywhere from 10 to 50% of their costs overall in their supply chain. The way we do that is either by enabling them to work more effectively with their existing factories through our software, diversify their supply chain across Asia, or you know, diversify the vendors that they're working with in China if they're just producing products in China. So we've got boots on the ground. You're more than welcome to come visit us, and you know, we'd be happy to connect online. You can find me on LinkedIn, is probably the best way, just Nathan Resnick. Or if you go to, you know, sourcify.com, that's where we're at.
Very cool. Thanks so much for coming on. And a huge shout out to John Corcoran and Jeremy from Rise25 for connecting us actually at Prosper Show. I think I was talking to Jeremy and he's like, hey, yeah, you got to meet this guy. He's great. You're going to love him. And he was right. So thank you guys for the introduction. Thanks for coming on. And yeah, I'm sure we'll be talking in the future.
Awesome. Thank you.
Today's podcast was produced by Podcast Motor and the Quiet Light content team. If you have a suggestion for a future podcast, or if you want to guess the quote from the beginning of the show for a chance at getting a shout out on the pod, email us at podcast@quietlightbrokerage.com. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, and subscribe to our YouTube channel and this show wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.